And joining us now is Amber McReynolds, who is the Executive Director of the National Vote at Home Initiative and Coalition, who was previously the Director of Elections in Denver, Colorado. Welcome to Background Briefing, Amber McReynolds.
It's great to be here.
Well, thank you, Amber. And tell us a little about your organization.
Yeah, so the National Vote at Home Institute has been formed recently, actually in 2018. And our goal is to help states and local jurisdictions and really anyone across the country implement vote-at-home type systems. And systems that we consider to be vote-at-home are similar to Colorado, Washington, Oregon. A few counties in California have now rolled out vote-at-home systems, and we're seeing growth in Utah, North Dakota, Montana, Arizona, and then various other states across the country are seeing more voters choose to use vote-by-mail as well.
So that's essentially what you're talking about, mail-in ballots.
Yeah, and the reason we call it Vote at Home is because it's essentially an automatic ballot delivery system. So that just means that election officials automatically mail a ballot out to every voter, just like we do in Colorado. And voters have the choice at home on, you know, how long they want to spend researching issues, voting their ballot, spending time figuring out what they want to do. And then they have a multitude of options to return the ballot. So many voters, for instance, in Colorado, we saw about 80% of voters in Denver when I was there return their ballot in person instead of mailing it back. So they can mail it, they can drop it off in person, they can do a drive-through drop-off, 24-hour box. So there's a lot of options for voters.
Well, clearly, mail-in ballots are increasing exponentially across the country, are they not? You mentioned many of the states that have adopted the vote-at-home process. So how is this playing in terms of the instant gratification that most people want? And, you know, the networks and the cable news networks in particular devote a lot of resources to election night, and people sort of anxiously sit around watching television late into the morning waiting for results. So is there any way for this new process that's obviously going to grow with more and more mail-in ballots to catch up to the election night results, or are we going to be having more and more of these contested election nights or weeks that following, which is what we have now, particularly in Florida and in Georgia?
Well, so I guess if we go back 18 years, we had the same situation in Florida that we have today, even with more mail ballots today. So so I think, first off, election results are never final on the night of. And even with, you know, polling place elections and very low mail ballots, counting ballots, especially paper ballots, all of that process, that takes time. And the most important thing about that process is that you want it to be accurate more than anything. And so, you know, I know the national networks want to call races and all of that, but, you know, we have seen over and over where the election continues far past election day. In fact, most jurisdictions won't certify their elections until the end of November. And that is actually when there is a final result that is certified, the results are final, the precinct results get posted, all of that. And, you know, with the election process, even though election day is essentially the last day that everyone votes, there's a period of time before that that happens, depending on state laws. You know, some states won't allow local offices to start counting absentee ballots until election day. Whereas, like in Colorado, we can start, you know, 2 weeks prior. So not release any results, but just scan and process the ballots. And so, you know, I think that, you know, patience is important, but accuracy is the most important factor in election offices getting this right. And that's why, you know, this process post-election, including the audit process, because the other thing that happens after all the results are actually done is we actually audit the results in most states. And we want to make sure that that, you know, and that determines that all the equipment acted as it should have and did what it was supposed to do throughout the election.
So what then do you make of President's tweet on Monday? He tweeted out, just quote some of the tweet, that the Florida election should be called in, essentially called in the favor of Rick Scott and Ron DeSantis, and that large numbers of new ballots showed up out of nowhere, and many ballots are missing or forged. And then he went on to misstate very inaccurately that Florida officials have concluded, quote, an honest vote count is no longer possible. Ballots massively infected must go with election night. So the president is basically saying everything that you've just told us is the case. He's making the opposite case, is he not?
Yeah, and so a few things on that. First off, that the tweet and sort of what was in that tweet is in violation of Florida's election laws. Secondly, you know, a large group of ballots that were coming into Florida up until, I believe, the 16th of November are military ballots. So, you know, I immediately, when I see or hear something like that, I go to the fact that basically the suggestion is that military votes shouldn't be counted, which is you know, completely unfortunate, especially given often the logistical challenges that they face in returning their ballots. But the biggest thing is, look, we want every eligible voter that cast a vote, that ballot should be counted. It should be counted accurately, and it should be counted under the procedures that exist in each state's laws. And that is what voters expect. That's what election officials across the country, and there are many fantastic election officials across Florida. I know most of them. And they're all trying to work very hard right now to get it right and do what they're supposed to do as this process continues. Because even though everyone else sees a result on election night, election officials go all the way up through and past Thanksgiving, closing out the books, auditing the election, and making sure it's done right.
And again, I'm speaking with Amber McReynolds, the Executive Director of the National Vote at Home Institute and Coalition, who was previously the Director of Elections in Denver, Colorado. But you surely have to add to the mix now with the mail-in ballots. You have to add the provisional ballots that came about as a result of the Help America Vote Act, which followed the 2000 debacle in Florida. And aren't they, by definition, they have to be counted after the election, right? Because provisional ballots are issued to people who show up to vote and can't vote because there's some, you know, sense that they maybe their signatures don't match, or there's various impediments, particularly, for example, in not so much in Florida, but certainly in Georgia, that exist in terms of the way elections are conducted in those states. So by definition, it would seem that provisional ballots would be by necessity counted after the election.
That's correct, and every state varies in terms of what that process looks like post-election, but provisional ballots, and actually this happens in most jurisdictions, you can't look or start looking at provisionals until you have everything else completed. So that includes mail ballots, that includes all election day ballots, that includes early ballots. So you have to have all that process done, and then you can look at the provisionals. Now, Colorado, because we updated our voter registration laws, and also our voting procedures and went to this ballot delivery system 5 years ago, we've actually reduced the number of provisional ballots that are cast in our state by about 98%. So Colorado doesn't have that many to look at post-election because we've made appropriate adjustments in our laws to basically reduce the need for provisional ballots. That's not the case in a lot of states. There are, you know, hundreds of thousands of provisional ballots that are cast, and that was put in the law to protect people and make sure that they could cast a ballot if eligibility couldn't be determined right on the spot when they were trying to vote on election day. So absolutely, that happens after the election. It varies by state in terms of how many get counted, but certainly anyone who is eligible and it's a valid ballot should be counted, and that certainly is happening in the post-election process that exists across the country.
So can I make the case that the work that you've done in Colorado is really about trying to increase access to the ballot? Because much of the debate in this country is about voter suppression, or the extent to which there are laws in places like, well, let's go back to the Voting Rights Act in 1965. It was a few years back, the Supreme Court ruled against Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. They made it null and void, and that required preclearance of any changes to ballots and election procedures and systems in states with a history of voter suppression. Though that no longer exists as a check and balance. So looking at the country broadly, how would you characterize what you've done in Florida and compare it to, say, what's going on in Georgia?
So, well, first off, I started in elections 13 years ago. I was in administered elections in Denver for the past 13 years and was director of elections for the past seven. And when I started in the office, the first thing that I noted coming into the industry, I was 26 years old, and it was all about what had been done for 20 years. And what I saw immediately is that we weren't doing a very good job of serving our customers, which are the voters. And the process was confusing, it was difficult, it was constraining to voters, there weren't many options. And so what I set out to do was, you know, update and change procedures as I could, and then advocate with the legislature for changes that would benefit all voters. And what we try to do in Colorado, and we did this through a coalition, there were many partners involved in what we were able to accomplish 5 years ago, but the whole premise was designing a system that's pro-voter and voter-centric and is agnostic, frankly, to party affiliation. Party affiliation and partisan politics and all of that has no place in the administration of the election process. It needs to be free from that. And so our whole system in Colorado, we designed it to be pro-voter, voter-centric, and we kind of worked back from there and then put all the processes in place to make that happen. Colorado has the second highest turnout in the country today, before everything is final, but it is the second highest right now in terms of the voting eligible population. It's considered the safest state to vote in. It's the most convenient state to vote in. And we have the highest voter registration rate in the country. And that is not by coincidence. That's because we put the reforms in place that benefit all voters. And, you know, the one thing, you know, a lot of people will make the mistake of thinking that it's a progressive reform or it's something that happened in a Democratic state. And, you know, we've actually had a split legislature up till this year. We have a Republican Secretary of State up till this year. So it's kind of been a bipartisan effort to benefit voters. And, you know, back in 2016 and 2014, when we first implemented our law, we actually saw an equal number of Republicans and Democrats benefit from same-day registration, some of the registration modernizations that we had done, and we also saw a mix of people winning in that election. So that's why I say it's a model, because we need to make sure elections are free from partisan politics. And the outcome of the election is one thing, but the administration of the election needs to respect voters and be pro-voter and voter-centric so that people can participate and not wait in line for 4 or 5 hours in the rain to vote.
Well, most elections in other democracies are the people who supervise them are nonpartisan. And we are unusual and unique in as much as the states control the elections and the different systems in every state and indeed in many counties, and that they are quite often administered by partisan officials who may or may not exercise their partisanship. There were great concerns about the Secretary of State in Kansas running for governor because of his past activity in terms of what many people see as election suppression. And then, of course, in Georgia as well, the Secretary of State Kemp, running for governor, is also administering the same elections that he is a candidate in. That in itself is pretty unique. So how did you do what you've done, which is very impressive, and how much is the rest of the country paying attention to what you've done?
Yeah, well, you know, Denver, the city and county of Denver is where I was the director of elections. I was appointed under an elected clerk, and that elected clerk is the only clerk in the state of Colorado that's actually in a nonpartisan office, meaning that it doesn't go through the partisan process and run for election in the even year. It runs in an odd year as a municipal office. You know, we were able to run things differently. We didn't have a tie to one party or another. And our whole thing, and my whole thing when I was director of elections for two different clerks, was transparency and, you know, putting information out there, bringing people in from both sides of the aisle and also from various groups to say, here's what we're doing. We did media tours. We posted our ballot processing on Facebook Live and on online cameras so people could see it. So I think that kind of transparency is really what gives people trust in the process. And that's important for election officials, and there's many election officials across the country that do that. In terms of the Secretary of States that run for higher office, you know, I think that perhaps that should be looked at. If you are going to try for another office and still be Secretary of State, that might be a problem. Many of them run for re-election, and it's just fine. We just had our Secretary of State run for re-election, and, you know, I didn't see any issues in Colorado as it related to that, but... You know, I think that secretaries that go for a higher office or something else that's different, that, you know, maybe there should be more limits and more restrictions on their ability to stay in their roles while they try for something else.
Well, Amber McReynolds, I thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate the conversation and learned a lot, so I'm very grateful.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Amber McReynolds, who's the Executive Director of the National Vote at Home Institute and Coalition, who was previously the Director of Elections in Denver, Colorado. We're going to take a brief station break and back examining the apparent strategy on the part of President Trump and Governor Scott to demonize the election recount in Florida in order to delegitimize the outcome if the Democrat wins.